It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. You're invited to call us. You can use our local numbers, too, 247-7282 or 353-4674. You can email me, ben@thetalkstation.com, as well, as we talk about what's going on in your legal life. And Wes Collins from Harvell & Collins with us in the studio. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning, Ben.
How are you?
Doing well.
I know we have talked on in the past, but it seems that this is a subject that a lot of people, certainly almost everyone, has an interest in, and that's homeowners associations, or what it means to your legal responsibilities of owning a home.
Right. We started, you know, talking about this again 2 weeks ago. I was out last week,
right.
So we're going to pick back up on that. Yeah, when we deal with homeowners associations, you know, in this area, Eastern North Carolina, of course, we have a lot of homeowners mm-hmm. associations, and they're pretty prevalent, you know, throughout North Carolina. And, you know, the idea with regard to a homeowners association is that, you know, we own our own property collectively. We own our roads. We own our common areas. We mm-hmm. might have a golf course. We might have tennis courts. We might have a pool, and we manage ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So inherent in that, management of, by ourselves, there sometimes problems
right.
with regard to that
right.
because we're not being, you know, managed so much, you know, by a municipality who owns our roads, and then we just have ordinances we have to live by, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a concept of uniformity in construction in most cases. You know, we don't want, you know, mobile homes sitting next to, you know, 6,000 square foot houses,
right.
you know, that kind of thing. So the way that we accomplish that is, you know, basically a homeowners association is set up as a nonprofit corporation that's supposed to run like a corporation with a board of directors mm-hmm. and officers and elections and all of those things. And then the document that is typically used to tie the homeowners association all together to make it, you know, different than a standard corporation is the declarations or the covenants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we've talked about that on the program before.
Now, is a homeowners mm-hmm. association incorporated usually?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So
doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be, but normally it's a North Carolina General Statute 55A
mm-hmm.
nonprofit corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're dealing with bylaws, we're dealing with articles of incorporation.
Well, I think last week we talked about corporations walking and talking like corporations.
Right.
So they have to file, they have file reports too?
Yeah, they do. There's a lesser standard, mm-hmm. a lower standard when you're dealing with a nonprofit.
I'm just thinking about as your due diligence, as you're going into a neighborhood and the things that you might want to look at and see what homeowners association's bylaws are. Of course, you want to look at covenants.
Yep.
But that becomes sometimes the rub is what's the difference between the covenants and the bylaws, and you want to go look and see how they actually operate.
That's correct, and there's oftentimes confusion about, you know, what the bylaws do
mm-hmm.
as opposed to what the covenants do, so on and so forth. But just in a very general sense, when you're talking about, you know, the difference between these documents, you know, the bylaws really dictate how we operate
mm-hmm.
as a corporation. When do we have our meetings? What control or authority do the officers have? What is a quorum?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, quorum is the number basically of members you have to have present either by person or proxy at the meeting in order to conduct business. It just deals with not really the restriction on our uses of our property. That's the declarations and covenants.
Right.
But just how are we operating? How do the people get put in place who are going to be, you know, the decision makers? How's the board going to be put in place? How are the different committee is going to be put in place, like the Architectural Control Committee. That's
mm-hmm.
that's always
the big one.
That's
yeah.
the ringleader of, yeah. the committees typically. You know, and sometimes you have the Beautification Committee and you'll have
mm-hmm.
the Roads Committee maybe. So, but those all are usually appointed by the Board of Directors. But the bylaws are going to tell us how we do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, of course, as I just mentioned, we have our covenants and our declarations. Now, those are synonymous terms.
Mm-hmm.
Someone says the declarations say this, it's the same as saying the covenants say this.
Right. Okay.
And this is a document that goes on record at the courthouse, at the register of deeds, before lot one is ever sold, the developer normally does that, whoever is developing the subdivision. And it right,
will the covenants be specific? I mean, will they be get down to whether or not you can have a fence 4 feet high, or whether you can have a shed, or whether you can have a, or is that part of the bylaws?
That would be a covenant issue.
Okay.
That would be a covenant issue, because really where we start with regard to restrictions on your use of your property, for example.
Everything within your border.
How high can your fence be?
Right.
Okay. What color can your house be? What kind of mailbox can you have? What can you park in your driveway? These type of questions. These are all restrictions on your free use of property. So the common law starts with the policy that we want to support the unfettered and free use of our real estate. That's where we start. And in the event that we're going to restrict someone's use of real estate, we have to follow some very specific rules and guidelines, meaning, for example, the covenants have to be on record. And that puts you on notice that, hey, if you buy this lot, you buy this property in so-and-so subdivision, then you're going to have to live by these covenants. You're going to have to make sure that fence is not over 4 feet high, for example. You have to make sure that you don't park your boat in the driveway for more than 7 days. You know, these are all things that we've talked about on the program before. And obviously, you know, logically, if you're going to be buying property that's in a subdivision, one of the number one things that you're going to be asking for is a copy of the covenants. So that you can review those and make sure that you're, you know, happy with whatever restrictions you're going to have to live by, before you pull the trigger and actually close on the property.
Seems like a developer would have to be pretty forward thinking to think about all these things.
Well,
if the, in the initial covenants, but I guess that's where I'm getting to, is that how often or how easily can covenants be changed?
Well, I would say that there's usually baseline things that you see in covenants that are pretty broad. Okay. But then all, you know, some covenants are more detailed than others. You know, I've seen sets of covenants that indicate how high to the inch your grass can be.
Wow.
You don't see that very often.
I couldn't live there.
You know, a lot of times there's a significant amount of discretion that's given to the Architectural Control Committee to just to deal with broad issues.
Right.
Like junk in the yard.
Right.
You know, things like that. But, you know, really, not to get too much into the technicalities of that, the courts in North Carolina have really scrutinized that pretty closely. And really are not favorable or not in favor of restrictions such as the Architectural Control Committee has the right to make decisions with regard to whether your appearance of your yard is in breach. Well, that is too vague. It's too ambiguous. You have to have a common plan or scheme that's set forward somehow. Like, you know, for example, you may have a fence, but we have to approve the fence. And the fence can only be of these materials.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's just something. Some
pretty
kind
common
of,
in a historic area.
A,
for example,
a common plan or scheme. If you just throw it out there, it's up to the Architectural Control Committee. That's too much subjectivity, and the courts really do not favor that.
Okay.
To go back, Ben, to your developer a minute. You know, the developer is concerned about this. I mean, the developer doesn't want the restrictions to be so onerous as to, or so complicated as to be.
Narrows the field of who can buy property.
Exactly. So they tend to, many times, developers tend to be very generic in kind of what they set forward, with the exception of those things that become kind of necessary to have some sort of community control over pools, tennis courts, roadways, you know, things of that nature.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a minute here with Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, and Let's Talk Legal. You're invited to call in with your questions, too, at 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. Welcome back to Harbell and Collins and Let's Talk Legal here on Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning, talking about homeowners associations and covenants and the like.
One more thing, Ben, and then we'll talk about kind of enforceability of these things. But mm-hmm. talking about developers, you know, again, usually fairly generic, unless, for instance, you're buying into that is in fact the flavor of the development.
Yeah, it might be a marina community.
Correct. Or you know, like for instance, this Farrington Village near mm-hmm. Chapel Hill.
Right.
You know, places that are highly, you drive in and you know what they are.
Right.
You would, no lot line, you know, no, all things are conforming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the landscaping, the doors, you know, are different colors, but the same door, things. Those places, of course, immediately kind of, you know, you're on notice that there probably are some very interesting
and, it's not a surprise.
And not surprising restrictions
yeah.
to live there.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But those develop, again, sometimes over time, and especially some of the older neighborhoods probably aren't the same as they were when they first began.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, when we're looking at those type of situations, of course, maybe we need to consider the possibility of amending the covenants.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big to-do usually.
Mm-hmm.
It can usually be done when we look at the covenants themselves, and in the event there's not language in the covenants themselves to allow amendment, you can look to the North Carolina Planned Community Act to determine if whether your subdivision fits within that box, because
mm-hmm.
There are some provisions in North Carolina General Statute 47F, which is the Planned Community Act, which does allow for amendment of covenants.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to follow those rules specifically. And normally, as we've talked about on the program before, you know, you're talking about maybe a 75% or a two-thirds, sometimes if you're lucky,
mm-hmm.
a majority.
Usually a supermajority. Yeah.
Yep, of the property owners, you know, have to vote either in person or by proxy for the respective
mm-hmm.
change. And that's usually somewhat contentious, because a lot of times we're dealing with changes such as, we've got to increase the dues
mm-hmm.
because it's more expensive to maintain the roads. It's more expensive to pay the light bills. The insurance bill is more expensive. And maybe there's a restriction on how much those dues can be. And when we're talking about people's money
mm-hmm.
and the people's pocketbooks, you know, it's going to be contentious. Sometimes we're talking about things such as, well, it could be anything really, square footage of the house, what, you know, kind of fence can be allowed, whether you can park a trailer in the backyard, maybe,
right.
maybe out of sight,
right.
you know, maybe that wasn't addressed in the original, you know, covenants.
Or, for example, kayaking. Kayaks are probably 20 years ago when development
right.
was good, nobody had one.
Right. Maybe canoes 20
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah. So now can you have a kayak visible
right.
in your front yard?
Or, that's right. I mean, it could be anything like that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
times change. But, you know, the process for making those changes is I found over the years to be very interesting, because, you know, you really need to communicate to the property owners exactly what the change is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really need to state, this is what the covenants state now, this is what we're proposing for it to be changed to. And you have to get all that together before you have the meeting. You can't just go into the meeting and say,
right.
oh, let's just make a change. You're never going to get the votes.
Yeah.
You've got to have a concerted effort leading up to that meeting where the vote is going to take place for the change.
Well, isn't that often where people get confused about bylaws, and they think that, well, you know, when we have a homeowners meeting, we can just change whether or not we allow yard sales, for example.
Well, you know, sometimes in your covenants, you do have language with regard to rules and regulations.
Okay.
Where it states there can be certain rules and regulations
mm-hmm.
imposed, you know, maybe by the Architectural Control Committee, so on and so forth. Those are usually with regard to things like how we're going to manage certain common areas.
Mm-hmm.
It's not; those are usually not issues such as we're going to impose rules or regulations on how you use your own lot.
Right.
Like, for example, if there's a road
mm-hmm.
In and out of the subdivision, and people like parking on the side of the road because there's a parking issue, there could potentially, if there's language in the covenants,
yeah,
be rules and regulations with regard to what parking is or is not allowed.
Mm-hmm. In other words, the covenant might say parking only in designated areas.
That's right. Rules with regard to how the swimming pool is to be used.
Mm-hmm.
Rules with regard to the tennis courts, the marina, those kind of things. The law really doesn't impose an obligation on a homeowners association to have to amend the covenants every time it needs to make a little bit of a tweak with regard to parking in the common areas,
mm-hmm.
use of common areas, use of marinas, those kind of things. You can do that through rules and regulations, but we do like to see language in the covenants that kind of we can piggyback off of that allows us to impose rules and regulations.
You know, one of the things that actually that came up in an earlier show was about insurance coverage by a homeowners association. I don't know that I would have ever thought to look over what the insurance covers if I was buying into a house, but they talk about how important that is, and that some homeowners associations may not carry enough insurance or proper insurance.
Well, of course.
You mean on, for instance, like the
common areas.
Director's liability, too.
Right, as well. Yeah. That would be the other one. Yeah, absolutely. The buyer, caveat emptor, buyer beware when you're buying into a subdivision. What is, you know, are there pending lawsuits, you know, between homeowners, and what do they concern? Pending lawsuits against the homeowner association in any way, all of this needs to be looked at, the viability of the homeowners association, particularly in a condominium where there can be very strong assessments in some of these larger, well, in any condominium, but particularly your larger buildings. You know, you're building condominiums.
Right.
You know, your 9, 10, 12, 4, you know, buildings that have, you know, 5, 10 units on each floor that overlook the ocean or overlook the sound or something of that nature. You know, gosh, to put a new roof on one of those buildings, to replace an elevator in one of those buildings.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about a lot of money. And, of course, there's no place for those accounts to be funded other than through those 10 or 12 people that live on that floor.
Right.
And then every floor thereafter. And this is sometimes, forgotten about a bit. When you go in to buy, you maybe can, you think you can just make the assumption that, that the association is in good financial standing and can weather the storm of those kinds of things. That's just not true at all. And yes, insurances could be looked at. Really, really the laundry list is quite large. And it does need to be, these things do need to be looked at.
And again, if you have questions, you can call us at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. But again, as we talked about with corporations last week, homeowners have to behave too. I mean, they have to have their right meetings and do things the right way.
That's right. And you know, we talked about the governing documents. We talked about, you know, the board of directors, the officers, the committees, the architectural control, so on and so forth. Talked about the declarations and covenants, same thing. And then we, you know, now get to the issue of, okay, what obligations does an association have to enforce those covenants? Because that's really a two-way street. You know, when you buy in a subdivision, you expect the covenants to at least be reasonably enforced. I mean, it's not just the association restricting your use of the property. It's the association restricting your neighbor's use of the property.
Correct.
So that you don't have, you know, the 6,000 square foot house, you know, sitting next to your really small house, or vice versa.
And this is where politics gets involved, right?
It does. Politics, apathy to a certain degree sometimes, because, you know, apathy is something we see in homeowners associations a lot, because, you know, people, a lot of times, they just don't care unless it's really bothering them.
Yes, that's right.
So if there's a breach on the other side of the subdivision, why do much about it? Why upset the apple cart? Why, you know, raise an issue and create some adversity? Well, and the reason why you have to do that sometimes is because the covenants really should protect everyone equally.
But the vagaries of a board, though. I mean, you have different personalities on the board different times.
You do, and you might have, you know, one board that was, you know, pretty passive, and then you might have the, you know, the Nazi board come on that's going to be very aggressive, exactly, aggressive with regard to enforcement.
All right. More on that coming up in a moment. As always, if you have questions for Harvell and Collins, you can go online at harvellandcollins.com, and you can listen to past shows. Email them as well through their website. Just go to harvellandcollins.com to find out more about what they offer and their services, too. And we'll have more on Let's Talk Legal right after this. Hey, welcome to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio talking about homeowners associations and some of those things that that come up. And again, the political vagaries of the board can really make a difference, I guess, in enforcement. Some will enforce very strongly and some not. I mean, is there a remedy if somebody is not enforcing?
Well, if you go to court on it, the first thing the judge is going to say is get your votes and vote them off.
Yeah.
Okay, because this is, you know,
a corporation. It's a quasi-government body,
it's
really.
It's a corporation, and really that's where you start.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you start with, you know, if you have more votes, then you're going to be able to get your people, you know, on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and but sometimes there are actions in homeowners associations that are so egregious, and maybe there's so much apathy about it, or for some reason, you know, maybe the buddy-buddy situation,
sure.
you just can't get the votes. And yes, there is a remedy in that event. You do have the right to file what's called a derivative action.
Mm-hmm.
It's an action for a corporation if the board, for example, will not do what you think it should do in order to protect or do what's right for the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give notice for 90 days to the corporation board first. Say, I don't think that this live power line should be run in this area because it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And this needs to be taken care of. It's in breach of the covenants. It should have never been put there. You know, these kind of things. Because, you know, that type of situation, for example, let's say someone was injured mm-hmm. because someone ran a power line from their house across to get to maybe a boat lift or whatever it might be.
Right.
Well, if someone is injured as a result of that, illegally, you know,
liability falls on everyone, doesn't it?
Yeah. Then, you know, if there's a huge assessment or huge judgment against the mm-hmm. association, guess who pays for it?
Mm-hmm.
The person who put in the power line? No, everyone equally.
Mm-hmm.
So then that would be, you know, a good set of facts where if the board maybe was buddy-buddy with this person mm-hmm. and it wasn't going to do anything about the power line, then that could be taken to court, and the court, and including a jury, can make a decision as to whether that's a breach and whether that's something that should be allowed or not allowed.
Mm.
So that's, you know, that remedy. But normally, you have to have some pretty specific facts
right.
to get to that point. Normally, if you don't like the way things are going, the best way to address it is not in the courts, but to gather up as much support as you can get and get the people on the board who are not doing what you think they should do off the board.
Right.
And some more, you know, reasonable minded people on the board. So votes would be the first, you know, place you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you get into the issue of, I know we're getting, we just have a minute or two left, and we'll talk about this next week, but you talk about enforcement then.
Yes. Right.
Because, you know, if someone is, for example, parking a trailer, in their driveway,
mm-hmm.
and that's not allowed, or they've done it for too long. Well, the association doesn't have the right to trespass on your property, hook up your trailer, and take it to mm-hmm. the impound yard. You know, they don't have that right. But they do have the right under the covenants, or depending on what the covenants state, or under the Planned Community Act to impose fines.
Yeah.
Up to $100 per day for any violation.
And that could lead to a lien. On the
absolutely.
Okay, that, we may get into that more next week here on Let's Talk Legal. Again, go to harvellandcollins.com. Call them for to find out how they could work for you at 724 at 726-9050, 252-726-9050.